This is the Justin Ryan Bizarro Show with Justin Bizarro. I'm Justin Bizarro. I'm your host. That's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. For anyone who's out there, you can find me on Instagram at Justin Bizarro. Again, that's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. And if you want to listen to us, you can find us on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. So thank you, everyone, for listening in. Thank you for already a couple episodes that we've recorded. I thank all the entrepreneurs who have come on the show. But I have a very special guest today, a very close friend. Someone that we're doing a lot of work with, and I can't wait to tell his story. So, Stephen DeKemper of Agon Pictures, how are you doing today from Indianapolis?
Oh, man. Well, first of all, thank you for that introduction, Justin. But I'm doing very well, very, very well, and looking forward to it. I've been thinking about this all day.
So, Stephen, let's get into your story a little bit. Let's talk about this and the audience. It is pouring rain here in New York City. It is thundering and lightning, and we've been through like days of monsoons. And because Steven's a very special friend of mine, he's kind of jumping to the front of the list of the episode. So while we're drowning here in New York City and we are an island here in Manhattan, I do want everyone to know that we are safe, but you may hear lightning and thunder. Even though there's padding and everything, it's pretty intense here. And so I apologize about that if anyone can hear that in the background, but I don't think so. But I'll apologize anyway. So, Stephen, let's talk about, I know your history. I know you and I are working on this great show together called Foodtopia, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk to the audience, like, where'd you grow up? How'd you grow up? Like, Give us the story. How'd you end up in the entrepreneurial space?
Yeah, for sure. So I grew up, born and bred in Indianapolis, Indiana. I was actually born in Mishawaka, which is northern Indiana, in the hospital there in Mishawaka. And I had a short stint, probably until I was like maybe about 3 or 4 years old, in Elkhart, which is where the majority of my family is from, my extended family, my mom. And when I was probably about 3 years old or so, we moved to Indianapolis and pretty much was raised there. And I grew up kind of upper middle class. And I've always been a fan of the cinema as a family. We've always watched movies together. And I didn't think about this until I've been thinking about this recently. I hadn't thought about why I was always drawn to it, but one of the things that I think it could be subconsciously is I noticed that was one of the things that my family always did together. That was an activity that always brought us together. And we would watch movies together and we would talk about what we liked and didn't like after and how, you know, it'd be cool if they did this, you know, it'd always be interesting, or I would have done it this way, or, you know, things of that nature. And I always thought that that was really cool. And I used to think that movies were real. Until my older brother told me, well, no, it's not real, it's fake. And this is around the time when HBO and Cinemax and all of that had the making of, it'd be like the HBO special, and that would come on, like, and it'd be like a 10 or 15 minute featurette right after the movie would go off. And I began to watch those and I began to get intrigued, but I never thought that I could do that. You know, I just thought it was really, really cool. So, you know, we fast forward a couple of years and I was getting into the camera, I was getting into editing, and I was getting little nudges, so to speak, from the family and also from the universe, you know, I think, which is understanding editing, understanding video, broadcasting. I ended up doing the news team in high school, coincidentally, I needed a class to take in school, and I had a credit that I needed to check off to have all my classes selected, and I didn't know what mass communications was, and I just took the class and it ended up being the news team, and then that like led me down another path, and that was really, really interesting. And my parents were entrepreneurs. My mom and dad ran their own business, mainly in healthcare. And that was, I guess, maybe subconsciously things that were going on from an entrepreneurial standpoint. I've always known that my mom and dad ran their own business, but I never really understood what that meant. And we also grew up in a family full of creatives. So we were always creating and always putting our work out there in really interesting ways. And as I was in graduated high school, I went off. Short version is I went off to film school. My mom said, "Why don't you try film school?" And I went out to Los Angeles, graduated from the Columbia College Hollywood with my bachelor's in cinematography. And I just began to go on this journey down the rabbit hole, so to speak, of filmmaking. And I didn't realize that I had been acquiring entrepreneurial skills by selling myself and selling my production services. But that's essentially what I was doing. And I didn't really think of it that way, but I was an independent contractor. And my photography skills and my cinematography skills were what was keeping the lights on, as well as, you know, odd jobs in between. And eventually down the road, I decided that I didn't want to work for other people anymore. I wanted to work for myself. So I created a production company through a series of different events that happened in my life that just kind of made me go, you know what, I think I'm going to go for it. And I decided to do it.
And that's Agon, right? The company that you're talking about?
Yeah, so that's Agon Pictures.
Talk to me about the name. Talk to me about the logo. How'd you come up with it? What does it represent for you?
Absolutely. So that's a great question. So Agon, so the name comes from Greek mythology, actually. And I was searching for a name, and I'm all about the feeling of things, you know, and I was looking for different names, and I came across something just told me try Greek mythology names. So I was looking at different names of Greek mythology, and I came across Agon. And the story of Agon is in Mount Olympus, warriors would go into battle and go out to compete in Mount Olympus. There was an altar that the warriors would go over to be, and they would pray at this altar and be blessed. They would ask this altar to bless them with the spirit of competition so they could go out and win and compete. And that altar was called Agon. And in every story, there is a protagonist and there's an antagonist. And they both come in the story and compete for which belief is stronger, which person is stronger, which person is right. And whoever, usually we like to root for the good guys in the story, and we want them to, you know, they're fighting for their beliefs and what they believe in, or if they have a belief that doesn't serve them, and then they go through a series of events in the story and they change their belief so that they can overcome the problem or the obstacle. That's essentially where it comes from. And I decided to go with Agon, and the concept and the whole essence behind it is Agon Pictures is where stories come to be blessed before they go out into the marketplace. And it's one of the things where we take our time to curate the stories. They have meaning. They're inspirational, they're powerful, and I like to think of Agon Pictures as the sanctuary. A sanctuary is a sacred place for stories to come to be blessed. And that's the whole essence behind everything. And the logo is actually something that's very near and dear to me. So my father passed away in 2020 of a rare form of cancer. And when we buried him, if he's standing in front of his plaque, the way that we have it set up is, I forget what it's called exactly, but it's like, it's not, he's not in the ground. It's one of those, like, I think it's like an outdoor mausoleum. Is that how you say that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's like an outdoor mausoleum. He's about 3 or 4, plaques up from the ground, and he's essentially at eye level. And when you're standing looking at his plaque, if you turn to the right, there is a tree that is sitting there, that is there. And when I was there visiting him some time ago, a couple of years ago, I usually go and I like to actually just, you know, kind of just have a conversation, you know, and talk to him. And when I was finished, when I was just kind of there hanging out and, you know, paying my respects and hanging out with him, I turned to the right and I saw the tree, and the light was actually just hitting the tree properly. And I took a picture of it, and it was actually turned out to be a very beautiful picture of this tree. And it's very personal to me. And I just always held on to it. And I was trying to figure out what the logo would be. And I was going through some of my old photos, and I saw that, and I said, this is it, you know, because when all that happened with my dad, When he passed away and the whole story behind that, that was a very major life event for me, a major turning point in my life.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because the tree represents life, right? And the tree is ever changing. You've captured it in time for your logo, right? So now, but it's captured in time, but that tree will never be that tree again. It always is changing. And, you know, if you're talking about growth and altar and stuff like that, it also represents the tree growing and changing of leaves and changing of seasons, because trees go, unless you're, a pine tree, most of the time you change quite a bit. But even pine trees lose 1/3 of their needles every year and grow and grow and grow and grow. And usually as they grow, they get rid of the lower limbs, because in order to have growth, you have to shed something. Like, exactly. It's just the way it is. You need to make room for something new, and you have to get rid of the old things, which can be tough. So let's talk about your relationship with your dad, and that sort of pivoting point in your life. What happened and what changed you?
Yeah, for sure. So my dad ended up having a really rare form of cancer. It's undifferentiated pleomorphic sarcoma, and it's very rare. And this was going on during COVID. He had been getting treatment prior to COVID, and it was kind of like off and on over the years, but something was different about this one. And I was working on a set. I was working on the movie Coming to America, the second one that came out on Amazon. And he got a call that, the cancer had come back, and for whatever reason, it just felt different than all the other times that, you know, he was getting treatment. So I decided to come back home, and, you know, I was talking with him, and while I was visiting over the holidays, usually during filming, the holidays around tail end of October, going into Thanksgiving, Christmas, November, December, industry tends to slow down. And then they get ready for pilot season the following year. So things were kind of slow then. And I go back home to Indianapolis from Atlanta. And COVID happened shortly after that. And while all that was going on, we find out that my dad actually hadn't been getting the treatment that he needed. And the cancer had spread and got more aggressive. And by the time we got into the proper treatment center, they ended up saying that, he really only had about 6 months to live, and he ended up dying 2 months later. And that was a really wild life event for me in my life, obviously, because of him passing, and then also to the circumstances. And then we were in the height of COVID. He ended up dying around, I think it was June 6th, was when he died of 2020. And it was a whole lot going on at that time. And it was just a huge life change for me. It sent me down a very interesting path. And from there, it was initially very tough at the beginning, but then I could kind of feel myself getting further away from myself, and I decided to go to therapy, which was also interesting enough because my dad worked in mental health field. And so I went, it was the first time I ever gone to therapy, and the type of therapy that I went to actually used an alternative form of therapy. I worked with a doctor by the name of Dr. George Pratt, and he works with a lot of athletes and entertainers and things of that nature. And it utilized creative visualization. And we began to implement this therapy and working with creative visualization to deal with the trauma of my dad. And when we did it, I mean, it worked great, amazingly. I highly suggest him. And I was able to heal from that. And from there, I was able to, like you said, in growth, let go of that trauma and heal from that, and then grow and blossom into everything that we have going on today with Agon and the direction of my career and everything.
I love this. So, it's hard because in some ways this brought you closer to your father, even though it was, what happened and he passed away very quickly. But in a way it's weird. I just went through this with a horse, not to compare a human to a horse.
Yeah.
But it's just all of a sudden like, divine intervention comes in and you get to spend time with these individuals that you normally didn't have or you didn't spend in the previous life that you wish you would have. And it's almost like there's this weird divine thing that goes on that gives you, it sucks. You go through trauma. You need to heal. it's very hard because the sadness and stuff that goes through, like you losing a family member or losing a parent, which I have not lost a parent yet, but obviously we all do at some point. And, but I think that there's the healing part, like it's very hard. And I think people can get stuck in depth and stuff like that. But if we realize there's divine design and everything, and that God also is giving us a gift sometimes in the process, even though it seems dark and possible, I think it's awesome. The other part is what you talked about is the visualization. I think that being able to be creative and do that is a huge thing. And you're a very driven, spiritual, skilled person. You have a lot of balance in your life. And so let's talk about your relationship with your mom. Like, mm-hmm. what's that like? And that, because I want to go into the spirituality, but I also think your mom's had a great influence on you and who you were. And I know also, just for the record, that you have made great deal of effort to be close to both your parents, at least most of the time. And so I think that that's a big deal. Yeah. And not many people do that. So I want to anchor this, but let's talk about your mom, your relationship with your mom and her influence on you.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my relationship with my mom is really good. I love my mom to death. She's definitely a character. You know, everybody calls, like she says, I'm her mini-me. You know, we look very, very a lot alike. You know, when people see me and they see my mom, they're like, wow, you guys are, it's like spitting image of one another. And my mom is a very interesting woman. She has a very interesting background. And she was born and raised in Elkhart, Indiana. And she used to be a cop. She's the oldest of five siblings, the oldest sister. And she used to be a police officer and was a detective for a short while. And then after she decided to do a career change, she got into the healthcare field. But she, kind of like myself, this is kind of how, like from a spiritual standpoint, the more we talk now, we're even spending more time together after my dad passed away. We kind of have opened up the door to conversation to, you know, more in-depth and deeper topics, you know, about life and spirituality. And, you know, she's opened up about, because I was raised Christian, but she's also, you know, admitted, like, you know, kind of always had of believed in like vibes and energy and different lifetimes and stuff like that. And I'm like, what? Like, seriously? You know, she was dragging us to church, you know, Baptist church growing up. But, and I thought that she would never be into it. She's like, no, actually, I kind of always have been into it. And, you know, our relationship has just blossomed over the years. And she's extremely hard worker. She's influenced me a lot. Growing up, she was the one, based off of the type of job that she had and the business she was running, was very successful. And she was the breadwinner in the relationship with my dad. And that didn't really change the dynamic or anything like that. But like to see my mom, you know, like making things happen and expanding the family and opportunities, and like, you know, us going on like family trips. And you know, she became, my mom was like the first person in our family's history to be making that type of money. And at first, like when I was younger, I didn't really understand it. I just knew, like, you know, yeah, my mom, you know, my mom's rich, you know. And now looking back on it, it's seeing all of the things that she sacrificed, you know, times that she wasn't there because she was, you know, working hard to create opportunities for us. But she also was like changing the family history and the lineage. You know, she was helping other family members have jobs within opportunities within her own company. And I never forgot that. I remember seeing when I would be with my mom sometimes, and like, you know, she's a very giving person. And I got that from her. She's very genuine, very observant, like me as well, and very kind and giving. And those are things that I've naturally adapted into my personality and who I am. And I remember my mom, like we would be out places, and there's a story in particular where we were on the plane, and she had got us, we were like flying first class, And she, they're getting ready to close the door, and there's this young guy and his daughter were coming onto the plane, and like this was when they, I think they were, I don't know if it's different now, but he was gonna, he basically had his daughter, like he only bought one ticket and was gonna have her sit on the lap so that he didn't have to buy a second ticket. And the flight attendants didn't want to allow him onto the plane. And my mom is sitting there and she's watching the whole thing. And I'm looking at her, I'm looking back and forth. And they didn't want to let him on the plane. He was going to miss his flight and everything. And he was saying, you're going to have to pay for another ticket. And he was like, well, I don't have that. And then my mom literally like got up and was like, I'll take care of it. I'll handle it. How much is it? And like paid for it and took care of the whole thing and got him. And at the time, I'm like, Mom, what are you doing? But I didn't understand like the giving nature of when you have more than enough, you know, uplift and help others, or when you can give to others and help out in need, you know. And that's the type of woman my mom is. And she's extremely creative and extremely silly too. I think I get a lot of my playful demeanor from her. She's a character, and so am I.
I just want to anchor this because you're 33 years old at the time, this time, mm-hmm. right? I'm 43. Yeah. And you and I spend a lot of time talking and talking back and forth. And we have this TV show we're in development of and trying to get off the ground and all of those things. And then we have other things and we were mentoring each other and working with each other and really good mm-hmm. friends at this point. But this spiritual nature of giving, I think, is a big deal because it was demonstrated to you and you know what it's like to take care of people, but you also have your father, which we talked about a little bit, that's also anchoring you like, okay, there's boundaries to giving because you can't give everything, right? You can give things away, but I think sometimes people get so used to giving, they're willing to give away the ranch, for lack of a better term. So I just want to anchor this, and I think it's a big deal. Let's go into visualization because we touched upon it a little bit and you do a lot of it. Explain to me how you do it and what you're trying to gain out of it holistically, not just for your business, but for who you are.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So the people, after everything happened with my dad and I learned about creative visualization, it took me down a very interesting rabbit hole. Because when I did the visualization with Dr. Pratt and we cleared up everything with my dad, it was an interesting experience. I told him what was going on, and one of the things I remembered that we did was he had me visualize myself on the beach. When I told him about how I felt about with my dad and everything, only thing he did in the session was listen to what I said. And said, okay, I know exactly what we're going to do. Like, he wasn't taking notes or anything like that. And it's almost like he could feel he was actively listening, you know, and he could just feel what I was going through. And he said, all right, this is what we're going to do. And he said, like, it was something like you have like 97 little things that you have to release with your father. And I was like, what? Like, why 97? Why not like 90 or 100 or like 50 or something, you know? And that's what I was thinking. So he was like, okay, so we visualized myself. I'm on a beach. It was a beautiful sunset. And we brought up he had me, what was it? I think he said we were on the beach. It was a beautiful sunset. And it was just like a breathtaking view. And I was holding 97 red balloons. And he said, whenever each balloon, we're going to release each balloon, we're going to count them all out, and each balloon that we release or you release is going to release the trauma and the pain that you have regarding your father within this particular situation. And I was like, okay. And so we go through and we count them out, 97, 96, 95, counting them all the way down. And he had me visualize me letting the balloons go and then floating off into the sky and off into the distance. And when we finished, man, I felt great. You know, I felt amazing. And I was like, what is this stuff? You know, and that began to, well, next he said, you can actually create from this space as well. And that really intrigued me. And I began to do a deep dive on his work, And he's got a couple of books out. And then the more I began to dive into this stuff, it led me to other people. And I began to research the same information from multiple different people and perspectives. And it really opened my perspective up and my scope up and understanding of this particular topic. And I began to study about how the mind works and the power of the mind and how the mind is a magnet and how we send out signals and receive and we, you know, pull things into us. And I began to study the subconscious mind, and I started to look into the science behind everything and, you know, how we have a servo mechanism and then the reticular activating system and all these different aspects of the mind and how it works. And from a creative standpoint and from a logistical standpoint. And then I began to study people. That began to take me down a very interesting path from the metaphysical and the mystical standpoint. So spirituality began to mix with science. And the science actually exists today that backs up all the spiritual, you know, teachings that are out that talks about this stuff, about the power of the mind and manifesting. You create your own reality. And, you know, you're the master commander of your ship and in your destiny. And, you know, with readiness and preparation, we are masters of our own fate. So I began to go down that path and began to study people like Dr. Joe Dispenza and Abraham Hicks and Neville Goddard and Dr. Joseph Murphy. I got into ancient Egyptian teachings like the Hermetica and the Kabbalion and things of that nature. And I began to see the same things showing up multiple times, and people kind of would explain it in different ways, but it was all basically essentially saying the same thing. And from there, I began to say, okay, well, let me put this into practice. And there's a couple of things that I did and visualized, and I began to keep for about 6 months, I kept a daily manifestation log. And I began to basically, anytime there was some type of synchronicity or manifestation, or whether it was broad or specific, I would write it down and log it. And it began to happen more and more. And it almost like, holy hell, I am creating this. And then that then led me over to someone by the name of Neville Goddard, who really put things in perspective for me with the power of the imagination. And Neville says that imagination creates reality. And how you can use this visualization and creative principle to basically create experiences in the life that you want for yourself. And that's what I began to do. And I had some very interesting experiences, and I would visualize certain things that I would want to happen. And the trick is you have to incorporate, you know, visualize what it is that you want to have happen. But then you also have to begin to incorporate the senses into it. So if, let's say, if I wanted to be on a beach, I would see myself from the first person perspective. And I got a really interesting thing I want to do with you really quickly while we're doing this. From a first person perspective, where I would want to be. And then I would look and I would say, okay, well, what am I wearing? Who's around me? You know, I would begin to create the environment too and take time to do this. And then I would say, okay, well, what's the weather like? It's warm. And I could eventually begin to, the more I stuck with it, I could start to feel the warmthness of the sun. And I could feel a little breeze. And then I could feel the sand between my toes. And then I could hear people walking by or kids maybe playing or the ocean waves coming in. And it was like I was there, you know. And I got so deep. You get so deep into it when you come back to where you are physically in real life. It's almost like you were actually there. And what I find out is that the mind cannot tell the difference between something that it is experiencing in the past, present, and future. So if you're in the moment right now thinking about something in the past, your body and your mind thinks that you're experiencing it then, whether it's a good or bad memory. Same thing for something in the future. You can incorporate those same emotions. You can conjure up those emotions for something that hasn't even happened yet. And your body can't tell the difference. And what begins to happen is you cross what Neville says, a bridge of incidents, where your body, your mind subconsciously leads you across a bridge of incidents that will close the gap on the thing that you visualize and bring it to you. And now the science out exists and suggests that when you really tap into it, you don't have to do anything. You end up bringing it to you. You collapse space and time and bring that event to you. You don't have to go out to it. And it's really fascinating stuff, man. And I've had some experiences that were literally spot on, exactly what I visualized. And it's kind of scary, but then also it's extremely exciting. And yeah, man, that's how I got into it. And I do, I practice it, if not almost every day.
Yeah, and I want to anchor a few things. One, the red balloons, I think you said they were red, 97 mm-hmm. of them. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's a song, 99 Red Balloons. But anyway, I want to emphasize this. I grew up on a farm, okay, and I understand that most of the world doesn't believe in cremation. I get it. Mm-hmm. But when you have farm animals, horses, dogs, cats, all of that stuff, you can't bury them all in the ground. It became illegal eventually, although we try to. And I think as humans, we want to bury our family into the ground or put them in a cemetery or whatever, okay, mm-hmm. or in a mausoleum, as we discussed, okay? But one of the things that is very true to what you just said and what I have felt, okay, and actually why I want to be cremated is because of this. Like a weird thing happens where if someone keeps the ashes with them, it's like they didn't lose the person. They're still with them, okay? And they're mm-hmm. not off somewhere in a church graveyard, or they're not somewhere where they never get seen or whatever, okay? I like that. But the second thing is, if you spread some of the ashes or you release some of them, or some
it's
people
like
put
letting
a little
it
bit,
go, right?
It's letting it go. And you free them and free you, and mm-hmm. it's a healing experience. I don't know mm-hmm. why, but it is always. Once that happens, okay, once the ashes are there, even though they're with you, okay, that's one, okay, they're still with me, they're gone, but they're here, but I can also release them where I want to, maybe it's multiple places, maybe some's left behind, and it's a little, people are like, well, what? But it's true, you can have them plant flowers, but there's this weird thing when we release it to the world, and what he's doing is the visualization of that release, because when we cremate and we release carbon back into the world after they've been burned, you're actually allowing them to live on in the world by becoming part of nature. When we put people in a box and they deteriorate in the box, like they're not able to contribute back to the world, they're sort of stuck there, okay? Mm-hmm. And I know I'm going to upset everyone, but the truth is when someone's stuck in a box, they're not able to do what they need to do in death also, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. hard, because I know most of my family members are in a box, okay? And people are like, oh, Justin, you're so cold hard and you don't understand. It's against our religion to be burned. I get it. But to me, we're missing the part of the release. We're missing the part of allowing them to become part of the universe so we can heal. The reason we can't heal is because we're both stuck in time. Okay. Right. And that's a mental thing and a physical thing. I hate to say it, because you can mentally move on, but sometimes you go back to the box and you go backwards. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why that is, but in my experience, a lot of death, I've just experienced best friends, two of them, you know, one in Iraq and Afghanistan in 2007, killed in action. And then another girl who is, we had a group in college. We were the Meepsa trio, the three guys, and they were the Meepsa trio because they meeped all the time. And we were the meatheads. But, you know, she got killed by a drunk driver walking home, doing the right thing from the bar. A drunk driver hit them. And, but one of the things is there's a lot of death in life, okay? It's part of life, and this is not to say anyone's doing it differently, but we have to learn to release it, and part of the releasing is letting nature take its course. And the red balloons, in my opinion, is just getting your mind to do that, okay?
Yeah.
The second part that you said that I think is important is, I think as humans, I'm going to anchor this, okay? If I cross from Germany into France, there is a border, okay? It is a figment of our imagination. Right. It does not really exist. We constructed it as humans. God did not put it there. There's been 10 million different cuts up in Europe during the God years, and God being, you know, putting kings in place and all this, you know, putting people on the throne and over God seeing us. But there's really, God didn't create boundaries or borders. Why? Because he doesn't see us that way. So here's the thing, when we construct things in our mind, they become so hard that we often can't see that they don't really exist. Okay, that's one. So the opposite of that is we also can create things in our mind and make them exist, like borders. It's a figment. We created it as humans. They don't really exist. And then we're like, oh, it's the water, just so we can actually have a concrete boundary, even though it's not really one and God didn't create it. And the United States was, you know, North America, Native Americans. And before that, it was a territory of the United Kingdom, okay, or the Empire, the British Empire, actually, technically. So that's one of the things. So when we're talking about visualization and making things come true, this is one of the things that, like, I'm going to anchor one more thing on this. There's a lot of times where you're talking to people and they believe something so true that happened and you were there and you experienced it in a totally different way. And you're like, oh my gosh, that's not true. Sometimes both of you witness something and neither one of you actually witness what actually happened truthfully. Because there's a filter, there's constructs that go in their mind. We all see things through different lenses. And then put on top emotional and trauma and all that. And that adds a weird hue to everything we see and will actually twist facts. Okay?
Absolutely. To into fit the narrative that we have. Yeah, yeah. We twist a fact. Whatever is going on internally is you know, how you're perceiving things externally. And we will have an experience, like you said, two people can be experiencing the same thing, witnessing the same thing, but have two completely different perspectives on it. And those perspectives are both, they're neither, you know, fact nor fiction. They're both valid, but neither are true, you know, which is wild, because it's like, based off of whatever the person's perspective is, what's true for that person is true for them, you know. So it's very, very interesting.
And I think the other part is when we're talking about this is that we have the ability to create monsters in our own head. But to what Steven's talking about is we have the ability to create the human we want to be. We can visualize it. We can think about it. We can see them. We can start to see what kind of character we want. We then can start to subconsciously put into place the things and the acts that we want to do. Often people are like, oh, how does Justin pick up on things so quickly? It's because as soon as I want to be something better, or I want something, or I want to gain a skill, I imagine what it's like to gain that skill. I imagine the human that I am. I see it in my head. What does Justin look like? How does he interact with the humans? How does he go to work? How does he interact with his family? How does he interact with the humans around him? And then I'm able to go backwards and subconsciously, even without sometimes intent, I'm able to start constructing that person. Okay? Because my subconscious now is picking it up. That's the power of visualization, is we can create monsters, or we can create the humans we want to be and achieve excellence. And you start making a lot of distance doing this, because also subconsciously you start thinking about what's my thing? What do I need to do? What task do I need to do this? So everyone in the audience, I think it's important that we understand that, like, there's the difference between great men and mediocre men or women, however you want to look at it, is our ability to see who we want to be and put that into action. So many people wish they could be someone else or pray to God to be someone else, but they don't actually spend the time looking at what that is. And what does it look like when I am that person? What does my environment look like? What is my life? Exactly. I mean, everyone's like, money, money, money. I get that. But you can't ever get it if you don't change your character. You don't shed layers and you don't shed your skin to become a new person. We talked about the tree ever changing, which is why this is a good episode, is we're starting to like go full circle here, is that the episodes that we go through, the things that cause us hardship or seasons, they often mean that we're having to get rid of things. And when we subconsciously visualize who we want to be, especially if we use like core values or virtues, like Ben Franklin's virtues, the 13 that he has, we are able to start anchoring things. And, you know, he does it through a grid where he would emphasize it, Ben Franklin did, where he would see who he want to be, he'd visualize it, then he'd put it on a grid, and when he would fulfill that visualization, he'd give himself a check mark for that week. You know, And so he reward himself, okay? So he break down his 13 virtues of who he wanted to ultimately be, and he'd be constantly trying to stress these things even more, but he would reward himself, like a check mark or a bonus mark or whatever. And he'd look back on it and, okay, I really achieved this, and I'm getting more and more ground. So I think that that's what we have to talk about here is, you know, there has to be a reward system. You have to understand that you have to pat yourself on the back, or you have to give yourself a trophy, okay, when you win. And then the next day, it's starting all over again. Tomorrow, there's no check marks on this column. I got to do it all over again. And I think by doing that, you don't, the small wins every day, you keep increasing. But yet, you're always having to visualize. You're always having to work on it. And you're never stopping. You know, yeah. Jocko Willink just did a great podcast, and one of the things he said is every day you start at zero. It doesn't matter what you did yesterday, okay? All that matters, I do better today than I did yesterday. I have to win again today. I have to make more distance today, because every morning I wake up, the scoreboard zero again. And 75 Hard does a great job of doing this for individuals, for getting us in the mental spot for that. And they've added in visualization now as you get into the second, third phases, or first, second, third phases from the beginning. And the what you're doing here is your brain is actually your rudder, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's where the ship goes, and the words we use, the words we say to ourselves, how we treat ourselves, how we let other people treat us, all of those things lead to how we visualize ourselves in the future. And we often do it with carelessness and don't realize that we believe too much what people say. Or if someone's like, oh, you're like your father. You're like, oh, yeah, I'm like my father. And then we don't achieve anything because we're just like our father. No, you're not like your father. You're not like your mother. They've influenced you, and they're good people. But you are still your own person. Your visualization should make sure that you're better than them, you know?
Yeah.
And I heard you say mini-me and stuff like that. And one of the things I want to anchor is that, true, we're smaller versions of our parents. We are heavily influenced them. We look like them. We're their DNA. But the truth is, we have a choice whether to be like them or not, or be better than them. It's not their job is to give us an environment to grow. It's our job to grow, okay? And this is one of the things I love about visualization, because it allows the growth. I went on a tangent there.
No. I mean, you're firing on all cylinders, man. I mean, everything you're saying is true, and the science exists today to back up everything that you're saying too, for anyone who's maybe second guessing it. But yes, it's absolutely true, and that's exactly what I did. You know, when I worked with Dr. Pratt, and he said we can create from this space. Well, I said, okay, well, Steve, what is it that I've always wanted to do? You know, who is that guy? What's his name? How does he walk? I began to ask myself these questions. How does he talk? You know, where does he live? What does he drive? What is he doing? Who is this guy? And I created a character, and I just slapped a cool name on it. And his name is Miami Steve, but really Miami Steve is just me. He's the truest version of me. He's the guy I've always wanted to be. And I just began to physically, well, I begin to think about it more and say, okay, like, what can I do to begin to make, like, you know, bring this to life? And the Bible talks about this too, with taking off the old man and putting on the new man. You know, you have to take off, what's the story you're telling to yourself, you know, and stop telling that old story and start telling yourself the new story. And then what happens is the world begins to rearrange itself to fit the new narrative that you're telling yourself. And also what happens is the new story that you're telling yourself, the world rearranges itself, and now you begin to have real-world 3D experiences that are basically manifestations of the new story and the new beliefs and thoughts that you have about yourself, about others, about money, about life, about women, about relationships, about everything. And you begin to have interesting experiences that solidify and show you that this is what's active in your life. God is sending you more of what you have going on internally. And it's very fascinating. And the thing about these beliefs, and when people talk, like you said earlier, people are saying these things, I'm no good at that. You know, well, I am like my father. My father never had it, or this is genetic, or whatever. And that's just something that a family member or somebody else said to them or suggested to them. And they accepted it to be true. They believed it. And then it sunk down into the subconscious, and they began to live that out. Well, the thing about that is, first of all, The good thing about beliefs are you can change them, because a belief is just a thought you continually think. And again, that goes back to the story that you tell yourself. So when you become aware of that, I believe that's called metacognition. You start to become aware of the thoughts that you have based off of the emotions. You start to feel bad randomly throughout the day. And you say, why do I feel this way? Why do I feel down? What am I thinking about? And you realize that you're thinking about something that happened to you 10 years ago, that is a negative experience you have. You begin to ask the question, well, why am I thinking about this thing that happened to me 10 years ago that's highly irrelevant to what I'm currently doing right now in the present moment? And you can say, okay, well, when I think about that, it makes me think that I'm not good enough. And you can become aware of these thoughts based off of the emotions that you have, and then you can begin to go in and change them through the subconscious, through affirmations, through visualization, through subconscious programming. And the power of the subconscious is very, very, very powerful, because it's controlled by suggestion. And suggestion, there are things being suggested to us 24/7, all the time. And the subconscious is highly impressionable, especially when we're kids. So when people are saying things, or you're growing up in a particular environment and you're getting repeated impressions on your subconscious from things that your parents or siblings or whatever is saying, that begins to mold and develop the subconscious beliefs that you have that you're not aware of. And that really doesn't begin to kind of solidify. You become slightly less impressionable as you get older. I think once you get into your 20s, you're slightly more impressionable. But you can still, depending on how people say things and suggest things to you, it can slip past your conscious mind, which is kind of like a barrier to the subconscious. And then you begin to ponder that suggestion or that idea that someone says to you, oh, I never saw you as that type of person. And then you get to think about that and you play that thought over and over. And now you're thinking about it and you're obsessed and you're like, damn, maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe I can't do this. And then all of a sudden it drops down from your subconscious down into your vibration. And then you begin to live that out in your life. And then the world will send you that belief that you have now that you've accepted to be true. And you have 3D evidence. But all it is it's the world is responding to you from a spiritual energetic standpoint. So when we are experiencing things in our lives, excuse me if you're going on this rant, but I love this stuff and it really gets me excited. And this is essentially what I've kind of devoted and studied myself to over these last couple of years. And these are the type of stories and conversations that I want to have. When we become aware of these thoughts and become aware of the power of suggestion and the power of the mind, we can then begin to say, okay, and become aware of, well, what am I experiencing in my life? And when things happen that you don't like and you say, okay, well, why is this happening to me? You can usually most times trace it back. If you think back on it, you have to take responsibility for your life and what's going on in your life. It puts you in the driver's seat of your life. You're no longer a passenger, you're the driver. And you can trace it back 9 times out of 10 to some type of thought that you were having, that you were pondering before, or some type of belief that you have that no longer serves you. And then what you can do from there is begin to do things to work on removing that belief or releasing that belief, like the red balloons that we talked about that no longer serve us, and then begin to implement the new belief that we want to have through creative visualization, through subconscious mind program, through affirmations and all of that stuff.
And I agree with this. One of the things I will say is, as I went through, I've been through some major life transitions over the last year, and you know, Justin Bizarro was dead. Weirdly, when I started visualization and I did this, and I created Justin Ryan Bizarro. It's why that's the name of this show. But it's also because I created someone else. I created something different. It's why I now have a company called Justin Ryan and Companies as I rebuilt my life. It's why I built Freedom Foods versus Food Service Partners, because I had to make serious changes. I had to go out on my own. I had to do things differently. And I had to start visualizing someone different. What did I really want? Who really am I? Who do I really want to be? And so if I'm going to get to know myself, I've got to get to know the whole self, okay? Mm-hmm. What are my insecurities? What are the things I'm visualizing, or what are the things I believe about myself that are not true, that I'm actually making true by thinking about them, or thinking because someone, or I value someone's opinion, or I let, you know, someone be my higher power and they have more influence on me, okay? So one of the things is, and it takes time, okay? And I've been doing this for at least 16 years now when I discovered this, okay? I was about 27. It took me 3 years till I was about 30 to really start getting it right and seeing the transitions in my life. But now I can do it in about 6 months. Once I really have an idea of where I'm going and what I want to do and what that looks like, it happens, okay? And I've been visualizing this podcast thoroughly. I've been visualizing the Night Dasher. I've been visualizing Justin the Food Entrepreneurs. I've been visualizing the Centurion Leadership Italian podcast and show for a long time, all of them with Justin Bizarro, but now it's really with Justin Ryan Bizarro because I've changed since the original versions. The other thing is that the TV show that we're talking about, Foodtopia, I've been visualizing this for about 3 years now, okay?
Really?
Hard, okay? Not, it had a lot of different names, but in essence, I knew what it was, okay? I knew what I wanted. I knew that I liked to travel. I knew that I like food. I knew that I like networking with other entrepreneurs. I know that it's instilled in me to grow humans and to regenerate the world around me and the planet for the better. Like, it's been instilled in me from the day I was born. It's just a matter of knowing what those seeds are that were planted in us. For me, it's God. God planted them in me. And if I let other people pour their opinions of me on me, some of it's true in the moment, but it's not true forever. We get to choose and we get to visualize what we want. And once I was able to see myself as a warrior or an athlete, however you want to look at that, you know, an entrepreneur, a farmer, which is to me, you know, a provider, you know, an entrepreneur is a builder or a creator. You know, a warrior is a righteous person that fights to do the right thing no matter what anyone says. Like, what is my morals and ethics? You know, things like that that sort of anchor us in who we are. You know, there's other ones, but those are the main ones that I'm going to talk about right now, because as we do things, as we become versions of ourselves, like, I have five seeds that I live by. And those, I just named three of them: the warrior, the farmer, and the entrepreneur. And so those things matter. When we start to say, okay, what is it that, what has been growing inside me? What's been always there, but maybe is overshadowed by other people's negativity or what other people are projecting onto me? Because often people project onto you who they want you to be because it makes them feel more comfortable. And whether they realize they're doing it or not is not the topic here. People just do it, especially if they're not aware of their own minds and how powerful they are. Okay. And so,
and you have to, I just want to add on to what you're saying too. When you become aware of this stuff, for those of you who are listening, when you become aware of this stuff, it's going to happen. You're going to get challenged by people are going to say things and suggest things to you. And I've noticed, I don't know, maybe this has happened for you, but they'll say things whether they're aware of it or not, and they're projecting a little bit, and you have to defend the new beliefs that you have. Your beliefs are being attacked. It's almost like the movie Inception. I mean, a perfect example of what we're talking about is if you go watch the Christopher Nolan movie Inception with Leonardo DiCaprio and Jason Gordon-Levitt, this is a perfect example of everything that we're talking about here. And people will say things to you whether they're aware of it or not. And the more solid you are, well, we defend our beliefs and our identity. Our identity or our beliefs make up our identity. So when someone says something to you or make a suggestion to you, some of us react in different ways based off of how we view ourselves. But someone can say to you, like, you know, then there's a difference between, you know, having faith in something, being hopeful, or being hopeful, having faith, believing in something, and knowing something. When you know something for a fact, like you know for a fact Justin Ryan Bizarro is a phenomenal person and an amazing entrepreneur. You know that. There's no second guessing that at all. Someone can say or suggest the idea that you're not and that you don't know what you're talking about. Depending on where you're at in that particular time, you can either, when you know that you, that what the person is saying is not true and accurate, you sometimes we laugh it off. Sometimes we can make a joke about it. Sometimes we can just say, yeah, okay, and not even think twice about what that person says. Sometimes we may get defensive and we will defend, you know, the belief or our own identity. And that can come up and play itself out in very interesting ways. But all that is, all that is happening is you have, we, you know, myself and everyone else, we all have these beliefs and these things that make up our identity. And when someone is challenging our beliefs, they're challenging our identity. And our identity has to defend itself, right? Because if someone says something that then shatters our identity, now we don't know who we are, you know? And that is it can become a slippery slope, but it's something that's very, very interesting. So when people come to you and they're challenging you and your beliefs, stand strong and defend them and go boldly forward and fight for what you believe in. And that's what that's about. That's why some people are willing to fight to the death, or it comes to blows about what they believe in, because they believe it and know it so deeply. It's so deeply ingrained into their DNA, they're willing to fight to the death for it. And I believe in that too. When you really, and that kind of is almost what goes back into what I was saying before about Agon. You know, when you have a belief, two people are coming, whoever has a stronger belief, it's almost like frame control. Whoever has that stronger belief, either one or two things can happen. Either the person, one person acquiesces to the other one and enter that person's frame, or it's not a match and they go away. And it's just a very, very interesting space and thing to experience, but it's powerful, powerful stuff.
And it's why family patterns repeat themselves. It's not exactly. Usually because it's because they're caught. It's not mm-hmm. actually instilled. Oh, I'm just like my parent and I'm an alcoholic. Yes, there's this genetic thing, but it's not as much genetic as it is a catching of it. It's why people can go through spiritual maladies and stuff like that. And if you can change your subconscious, you can change. It's why step programs work, which I'm going to get into the next episode, because I'm going to ask Stephen to do a part two, but I'm going to leave this with everyone. Okay. The reason baptism is such an effective tool in Christianity and why people get rebaptized is because when you dip in the water and there is that experience, for some reason you feel washed and you feel like Jesus is back into your life and you've now connected with Jesus. Okay, that's why everyone's like, oh, Jesus is the only way. It's not necessarily true. It's just that what they're doing is they're anchoring something in your head. You're being cleansed and, okay, now I've been baptized. Now I'm a man of God again. Now I'm a man, I'm going to walk like Jesus. Jesus is my savior, okay? And what it does is in that moment and doing that, if done properly and then followed through and the person actually believes what's going on in their mind, that they're actually closer to God because of this and they've been, you know, washed away their sins and they're a new person and now they stand a chance to be closer to God and start a new life. That's why it's significant, because for some reason, if we can't do it ourselves, we need someone else to do it for us. And baptism, especially in our older years, not when we're a baby, because we don't realize that's what's going on, is why that's significant. Why John the Baptist did it to adults at first, because it all of a sudden is a new thing. I'm taking this new journey. I am a new person. I've been washed in the purity of water to become something else. Okay. And if you talk about God and purity, we understand that purity is also love and patience and kindness, okay? So what they're doing by washing away everything is they're washing away and helping that person get rid of all the versions that aren't them, that there is a true version that they can connect with God and achieve, okay? But they got to wash away sort of what everyone else has said, and it doesn't always happen in that moment. But there's this slight hope now. And this thing that happens in the eyes of God by doing that in the mind of the human that allows us to start to build better futures if we choose to really believe what's going on in that baptism, okay? The cleansing of the water. That's why its water is so important and it's pure and it's God created. We don't dip ourselves in wine. That's man-made. We dip ourselves in water. It came here. It was before we ever came to this planet. God created it. Okay, so in that there's a significant tie to the purity, the dipping in the water, the we're someone different by the time we go under versus when we come up, because we're washing away our sins, which is the significant that goes on in our mind to change our mindset. So let me anchor everyone with this. You have the ability to change whoever you are, and I'm going to get Stephen back on the show for a part two, but I just wanted to say thank you, everyone. You have the ability to change your life by just thinking of yourself as the person you want to be and visualizing it. We're going to talk about this a lot more on the next episode with Stephen. And thank you for everyone for listening in. If you want to find us, you can find us on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. I will put Stephen's Instagram on the links for the show so everyone can find him. But I guarantee you're going to want to listen to a part two because this is only the tip of the iceberg. So
absolutely.
Thank you, Stephen, for joining us. And thank you, everyone, for listening in. And we're out.